Good afternoon. This is Melanie Lilliston with the National Coalition for Homeless Veterans. Today we're going to be talking about and going over the Homeless Veterans Reintegration Program. I'm going to provide an overview of the HVRP program in the grant application process and then answer any questions that you guys may have. Our presentation was emailed earlier this week, but it is also available on our website, which is www.nchv.org. If you click on the conference call graphic, which is on the right-hand side, the materials there are right at the top of the page, and I'm going to be going over the presentation portion. It covers my slides. The full HVRP SGA is listed there. There is also an HVR fact sheet, which will give you a one-pager front and back of overview of the program, some of the funding limits, where it comes from. It's kind of a good overview that you could provide either to staff that may be wanting to know more about the program or other partners that you could hand out to. So that's there for you as well. In addition, that's the HVRP Best Practices Project. This is a project that we did a couple years ago that compiles a list of best practices, programs that have been successful in receiving funding and putting those programs into place within their local community. There's a variety of different projects there, and it's a great way to kind of see exactly how the program takes shape and how it can be put into place in your local community. So those are the resources we're going to be going over today. I'm going to go ahead and start. I know some people will be joining the call, but if you could just keep your questions until the end, and then I'll open it up to as many questions as we can have. So just make a note as we move through, and I will take as many questions as we have. With that, I'm going to go ahead and start. On page 1, slide 2, this is the overview of the HVRP Reintegration Program, Homeless Veterans Reintegration Program, the law that authorizes the program, and who administers the program. So this will give you the legislative review and the ideas and the if you have specific questions about different regulations of where they come from and different definitions and such. This is the actual law that shows where the program was authorized and also tells you who administers the program, which is the Assistant Secretary for Veterans Employment and Training, which is currently Ray Jefferson. So that's whose office manages this. He has a team of staff through the VETS office that does do the grants management piece. But I include this here so that way you have an idea of where the funding is authorized and appropriated at. Moving along on slide 3 here, the HVRP objectives. This is an employment-specific program, and it is targeted to finding employment for veterans within your community. However, it does have two objectives that you must take into consideration when you're planning your program design. The first one is to provide services to assist in reintegrating homeless veterans into meaningful employment within the labor force, and to stimulate the development of effective service delivery systems that will address the complex problems facing homeless veterans. So it's, while it's employment specific, you do have to address some of the services and job development features within your local community. As most of you know, there is a current SGA out, solicitation for grant applications. This does give the specifics for this current grant year. It is a predefined grant year starting July 1st is when the funding will be used to June 30th, 2011. It is 1 year of funding with optional 2 years of additional funding based on renewal funding based on your ability to meet objectives and the authorization levels of the program. So it is 1 year funding with optional 2 year renewal. There is a total of $5 million available for the urban grants, which range, the awards range from a minimum of $75,000 to a maximum of $300,000. And there's $500 million available for non-urban grants, which will range from $75,000 to $200,000. I'm going to talk about what urban and non-urban are in a few minutes, but those are the minimum and maximum numbers that you can apply for each one of those categories. Keep in mind that one of the main objectives and one of the main features of the program is the follow-up that must be provided for 90, 180, and 270 days after participants have entered employment. So it is a long-term investment, so it does go well beyond a year that you will be working with some of these clients. As I said before, there is two different categories, urban and non-urban. These are based on census numbers, and urban is the 75 most populated U.S. cities. You will see a list in Appendix G for all of those cities, and it's based on the population here. If your city that you will be serving, your geographic location that you will be serving, is not listed in Appendix G, it is considered non-urban. And so, therefore, that's the category that you will apply for funding in. Keep in mind that you are going to have to show and demonstrate the areas that your program is going to be served. So, for instance, if your program might be in, for instance, let's say your headquarters office might be in Washington, D.C., however, your program is going to serve individuals that might be outside of the area in the Maryland area, your geographic location would be Maryland, not D.C., because those are the services and those are the geographic areas that are going to be served. So you are going to have to have a geographic either picture, map, something along the lines that will show the areas that you are going to be serving. You must indicate which category you are going to apply for funding in. If you are going to be serving urban and non-urban, because your geographic overlaps, you must apply for the non-urban funding. If you apply for urban dollars, it has to be one of those 75 cities only. Now, as we go forward, we're going to talk a little bit about the program design and some of the different things that are essential in the program itself. As I said earlier, it is an employment-specific program, so the ultimate goal is to get long-term meaningful employment for veterans enrolled in your program. However, in order to do that, you must successfully remove some of the barriers that are not allowing veterans to get to and receive employment offers. So the program design is aimed at providing comprehensive services through client-centered case management, which essentially means that you're going to have an individual plan for each individual enrolled in your program. You're going to use a variety of federal, state, and local resources that already might be in existence. You're going to have clear strategies and obtainable goals for the training, employment placements, and retention of employment. So as I said, it is employment-focused, and you're going to have detailed goals and objectives for those. You must be flexible to meet the local needs and the complex needs of veterans. So the first thing here is you must meet the local needs, meaning that your employment training is focused and makes sense within your local community. If you're in a rural community, it may not make sense to have construction jobs because there are no construction jobs in your area. However, it might make sense to have something that will be obtainable. So you want to have your training focused in something that will allow veterans to be able to receive employment at the end. You're also going to want to meet the needs of the complex needs of veterans, meaning you're going to have to know and how to know what the needs are and how to serve veterans, because as many of you who currently serve homeless individuals know, they have a variety of needs, and veterans have even more specific needs because of their military service and some of the issues that they have had based on their service. You must also demonstrate the capacity to partner with workforce investment programs and other agencies to develop jobs. With the limited funding amounts, there's no way you're going to be able to fund all of the services needed, or it's going to be very hard to fund all the services you needed within your program design. So you're going to have to partner with organizations, in particular your workforce investment programs, that may be able to provide some training and assistance to veterans in your community to help augment the dollars you're going to get from the Department of Labor Vets Office. And most importantly, you are going to be responsible for participating in the stand down, which is a 1 to 3 day event hosted locally. If you want some more information, you can find that on the NCHV's website. But really, a stand down is a 1 to 3 day event where you bring resources and opportunities, organizations, whatever it may be. I kind of describe it as a one-stop shop of all of the things that a homeless veteran might need in order to get off the street into housing. A lot of times it's food, 3 meals a day, an opportunity for some either access to housing, dental care, showers, hot meals, all of those things that you would be providing either 1 to 3 days of 3 days. And you must participate. Doesn't mean you have to host it, but you do have to participate in a stand down in your local community. So the scope of the program design, I'm on slide 7. The program will assist veterans by providing, and here's a list of the minimum requirements that you must have: outreach, intake, pre-enrollment, and assessment, job placement services, job training, referrals to employment services, job search workshops, resume writing, coordination with other programs, and as I mentioned before, you're going to want to make sure that you're not duplicating resources. So you're going to work with your DVOPs and your leavers, your HUD continuum of care, any grant and per diem programs, as well as your veteran service organizations, your AMVETs, your Disabled American Veterans, your VFWs, American Legions. Different communities have different resources, and therefore you're going to partner with them as it makes sense within your community. However, you're going to want to make sure that you do partner with them and utilize them as much as possible. Referrals to healthcare, counseling, and rehab services. This is one of the big barriers that a lot of veterans may have, is they don't have adequate healthcare, counseling, or rehab services, and so this is one of the major barriers to them getting employment. You're also going to have other supportive services that will help them get into the labor force that may be individualized based on the needs of veterans in your community. And then most importantly, you're going to have strong referrals to housing assistance. It's hard to keep and or get employment if you are not housed, and so the Department of Labor knows and sees the major correlation between the two, and it is something that you should take some considerable time in finding referrals to housing and how you'll look and get that taken care of for veterans. So moving forward, the program design, as we talked about some of the different services and the trainings. Now, one thing to keep in mind here is that at least 80% of enrolled participants must participate in formal training activities. Training activities include on-the-job training, computer skills, specialized and/or licensing programs, or other formal trainings, depending on what is the need of the veterans. Now, keep in mind that basic instruction, life skills, and money management are required. However, they are not things that count towards that 80%. So if you have a class within your program that may be essentials of computer processing, that's maybe 3 or 4 weeks, that you have lesson plan, curriculum, you have specified teachers, they come in, they sign out, all of those types of things, those are considered formal trainings. And those are the types of things that are going to be required for 80% of your participants. And also know that each veteran will have a specific plan based on their needs. So not every veteran will go to all of your classes or to the offered classes, but it is important to know that 80% of them must participate in formal training. There are two primary outcome measures for the HVRP grant. The progress of your work is tracked through common measures, which is Appendix H, and it has more information to look at. But essentially, you're going to be filling out and you're going to be held to the goals and objectives listed in the 2010 Competitive Grant Goals Chart to see exactly how and what your organization will have to report and what the percentages that you lay out are going to be put to. If you go and open up that chart, if you put your mouse over it, each different box has a different definition of what it is talking about. And there's more information there if you in the comment section if you want some more additional clarification on what some of those terms mean. The percentages here are what we're talking about. So the two performance measures are the entered employment rate, the EER, and the retention following placement. Now, for the entered employment rate, the minimum rate is 66%. For the retention following placement, the minimum rate is 65%. Now, I will say this, is that the minimum rate is very low. Most programs go much higher, but in order to be competitive and at least be scored, you have to meet these minimum percentages. So if this isn't something that your organization is able to do or don't think it's feasible for your organization to get these rates, it doesn't make sense for you to apply for funding under this grant, because you won't be considered eligible if you can't meet these minimum percentages. Now, The next slide talks about the intern employment rate. This is the number of participants who enter employment, who are still employed after 90 days, divided by the number of participants who have exited the program. One thing to keep in mind is, as some of you, if this is the first time that you've done this, you want to become familiar with some of these terms and know what they're specifically asking. This one is looking at the long-term success of the program, so you're looking at people, the overall number of people who are enrolled in the program versus the number who have then who are still in employment. So this is something to keep in mind and know that you're going to have to track. The second is the retention following placement. This is the number of participants who entered employment and who are still employed 100 and 270 days after placement, divided by the number of participants who entered employment. So this means the first one talks about your entered employment. This is the retention, meaning how long are they and what is the percentages of individuals staying in placement. Like I said before, Appendix H describes the specific technical performance data required, and both Appendix H and D are to be used to help you determine your plan goals. But it's important to know what the overall two goals are so that way you can make sure that you'll be able to meet those. Now, moving and looking forward, this is a results-oriented model. They are looking for superior program results well above the minimum requirements. That being stated, there is no program model that is mandatory, but you must be responsive to the needs of your local community and achieve those two objectives that we talked about at the beginning of the call. Some of the things that should be included are outreach, assessments, referrals, and enrollment within the program, development of individual employment plans, which can result in job development, participant in training and supportive services, entry into full-time employment, and follow-up. So those are the things that you're going to have put in within your program in order for it to be successful. Some of the reporting requirements, as I said, everything is tracked through the common measures process, but tracking begins at the referral and assessment and continues through follow-up. So it is a lengthy process that you will be working with and maintaining services with these veterans. You will do quarterly technical performance reports, and then you will do follow-up reports for 90, 100, and 270 days after individuals are entered employment. So those are just a little bit overview of some of the program design and specifics there. Now I want to talk about some of the grant applications. This is where we're going to be talking at, about very specific outcomes. And these are, like I said, everything you're going to be doing is achieved through the program designed to remove barriers that veterans are facing to get employment. So it's important to know that you're removing those barriers and helping veterans to receive that long-term meaningful employment. This grant has specific sections and requirements, however, is not a form grant. So there are certain things that must be included. However, your organization will write the narrative and provide all of the info in a format that that you decide. There are budget and assurance forms, and those will be filled in. But for the most part, you're going to be drafting and narrating the information based on how you want to present it. In order to be eligible to receive HVRP funding, you have to fall into one of the categories listed on slide 15, either a state and local workforce investment board, a public agency. These include state, county, and city levels, federal levels, VAs or those programs affiliated with VAs are not eligible, or any other federal agencies. For-profit or commercial entities, and nonprofit organizations, including faith-based and community organizations. So you must apply, you must fall into one of these categories. Now, keep in mind that you can partner with other groups. So if you are a local VA, you're not eligible because you're funded at the federal level. However, you could partner with a for-profit or a nonprofit agency in your community, and they could receive the funds and assist you through that. But the funded organization has to fall into one of these categories. This is a competitive grant award process. It's done on an annual basis with an optional 2 years of funding, It's based on eligibility of funds and satisfactory performance. So you are guaranteed 1 year of funding, but then after the first year, you'll have to reapply for second and third year dollars. You can apply online through grants.gov. In order to do this, you're going to go under the Get Started registration process. This does take several days, so if you are going to be submitting your application online, I would encourage you to go ahead and start that now because it does take some time to set that up. And keep in mind that there are specific formats that your documents must be saved in. Those are listed here. The .docs, the .pdfs, or the text files are the ones that they're going to be allowable there. In addition, you can also submit a hard copy. It must be mailed or hand-delivered to the DC office. The address is listed in the SGA. If you do a hard copy, you must include one original document in blue, signed in blue ink where appropriate, and two copies of the cover letter, executive summary, technical proposal, and cost proposal. So you're going to have three total copies, but one original and two copies. Within the cover letter, you're going to state the category, the dollar amount you're asking for, and the location that will be just served. You must use tabs or dividers to show the three different sections, and we're going to go over those in just a second. Keep in mind, you have to meet the deadline. Use FedEx, something along those lines, so you can guarantee the delivery, and it must be delivered by 5 p.m. on April 26th. As I just mentioned, there are three parts to the actual application, the executive summary, the technical proposal, and the cost proposal. The total application is not to exceed, NTE is not to exceed 75 single pages in 12-point font with 1-inch margins. It is to be double-spaced, and attachments are included in the 75-page maximum. As I said, you need to have the different sections and subsections divided and clearly identified, and all pages must be numbered. The executive summary talks about and reflects the overall strategy, the proposed area to be served. Are you urban or non-urban, and specifically what sections are you covering? Your experience in serving veterans, serving residents in the proposed service area, how and what has your community, what have you done within your community before, your proposed strategy, program design, method, projects, or statements of work with schedules or timelines, and your descriptions of measure of success for the plan. I always suggest that you do the executive summary last, as this allows you to have a summary of what you've included within your technical proposal. The technical proposal is the pretty much the big bulk of your application. The sections listed on slide 20 are the subheadings that should be used. You're going to want to clearly identify each of these subsections within your application and answer those sections that they're asking for completely. So within the need for your program, you're going to identify the number of veterans in your community, how and what the services are requested, the different disparities in the local numbers when it comes to getting employment for veterans, those types of things. In the approach or strategy to increase employment, you're going to talk about the different services, the training activities and curriculums that are going to be there, any of the local employment networks that you're going to be working with and how you're going to get them to hire into the different jobs, the sequence or flow of employment and training services for HVRP program participants, and any types of trainings that will be there, the length of time, the curriculum, and how the training will be provided to them, as well as provide any follow-up in how you're going to address retention rates. Linkages with other facilities that serve homeless veterans. You're going to talk about and how you're going to work with the network of other service providers in your area, both public and private agencies, your continuum of care, and any other programs that might be providing services locally. You're going to talk about linkages with other providers of employment and training services. So those people or groups that might be already be providing training, how are you going to partner with them, specifically your DVOPs, your Disabled Veterans Outreach Programs, and your LEAVERs, local veterans employment representatives, and your workforce investment programs. How you're going to partner with them and make sure that you're able to receive and assist veterans getting to employment. The proposed strategy service, the next section is the proposed supportive service strategy. So what are you going to be offering that will assist them? These include transportation, mental and physical health services, substance abuse, anything that will help remove some of those barriers that veterans face when getting employment. The next section is the organization's capacity to provide required service activities. So you must describe your key staff experience, any biographies, histories, knowledge. This is the area where you're going to explain why your organization is the best one to get the funding to serve veterans in your area. The measures of success, you're going to talk about this through the proposed common measures that is listed there, and you're going to talk about how you're going to meet those goals and how you're going to change any or modify those with feedback, evaluation, and so forth. Sustainability, since this is a 1 year with two optional years of funding, you must talk about how your program will outlast the funding and how you're going to go about trying to receive or look for additional dollars for this program. And most importantly, tying with proposed housing strategies for homeless veterans. Who in your community are you going to be working with to ensure that you'll be able to get veterans into housing and make sure that they will be able to keep their housing? HVRP dollars cannot be used to secure housing. They must be used with other places, so things like utility deposits, rent, first and last month rent, furniture, all of those things must be paid for through another source, and you must show that you have those partnerships to be able to do that. And the last section is the green jobs. You're going to describe how the proposed program will develop green job identification and placement strategies that relate to specific green jobs that are listed. So it's important to know that green jobs is one of the main focuses of the Department of Labor right now, and so you need to look at strategies and ways that you might be able to incorporate green job development within your program. So that's the second section. So the first one was your executive summary. You had your technical proposal that included all of those subcategories. And the third is your cost proposal. On page 20, on slide 21, it's all of the sections that must be included for your cost proposal. They must be completed and signed when necessary. So all of these, most of them are forms or included in the appendix of the application, and you must fill them out and sign them in blue ink. So the application for federal assistance, the budget information sheet, the budget narrative, the assurances and certification page, which is Appendix C, your financial audits within the last 18 months. You must have had an audit within the last 18 months to be successfully eligible for this program. List of all employment and training grants for the past 3 years. There's a form for that that you're going to actually you're going to just list them on a sheet of any grants that you may have that will be employment and training focused. There's a survey on ensuring equal opportunity for applicants, which is Appendix F, and the indirect charges or certificate of direct costs, which is Appendix I. So your cost proposal, with the exception of the budget narrative and a couple other forms, are going to be things that you're going to fill in and complete based on the provided sheet. The SF-424 must be signed, and it must be the original copy with the most up-to-date information on there. On this form and throughout the grant, no matching funds are required, but they are encouraged if you can show that there are funds available to augment or help the dollars that you're getting from the Department of Labor that will be a benefit to you. And whoever you list on this form will be the programmatic point of contact. So keep that in mind as you do fill that out. The SF-424A breaks it down into different categories. The different categories here, your personnel, which would be your total cost of personnel, you will need to break this down in accordance with Appendix E, but this is the total number here. The fringe benefits, not to exceed 35% of salary and wages, so make sure that that percentage stays in line there. The travel, you are going to have to travel, two individuals are going to need to travel to D.C. In the July-August timeframe to attend a national conference. So you must include dollars there for that. However, your travel budget cannot exceed 5% of the total funds requested, so make sure you keep that in mind. Your equipment, nothing can exceed $5,000 per unit. any supplies that you might have, general office supplies, contractual, if you're going to be contracting out for services or trainings, those will be included here. Any follow-up services that you'll have to be or working with, the 90, 100, and 270-day follow-up needs to be included for it to be covered, and your other the participant supportive services or anything else that you may have to cover dollar-wise. So that's the breakdown of the 424. Just to note that administrative costs are all of the direct and indirect costs associated with the supervision and management of the program. So if you have someone that is going to be working on or compiling some of your data, that would be an administrative cost. So you have the cost of that individual, their salaries, as well as paying for some of a portion of the rent and those types of things would all be considered administrative costs. Keep in mind that it cannot exceed 20% of your total grant award. So administrative costs are capped at 20% of your total award. The criteria, the funding, there is a certain number of points that are allowable for each one of the sections we talked about in some of the subsections there. Need for the grant program is 10 points. Is a maximum there. The overall strategy to increase employment and retention in employment is 35 points. You can receive up to 10 additional points if you are going to be addressing the needs of the chronically homeless veterans there. The quality and extent of linkages with other service providers is 20 points. Your demonstrated capacity in providing services is 25 points, and your quality of overall housing strategy is 10 points. So it is important to keep in mind the different points that are available in each of those sections. Some of the key notes on budgets, you must obtain, plan, and obligate to spend out your dollars at 90, 100, and 270 days after the grant expires. To track and obtain the necessary retention data, so you must include some include some dollars for that follow-up process. And in addition, you must also, within your narrative, describe how you're going to track and get that information from participants. Some important reminders, something to keep in mind as you are designing and looking at your program design and scope. In order to be an eligible person for a participant in the HVRP program, an individual must be homeless and be a veteran. The definition is listed in the SGA, but to summarize, it's a person who lacks a fixed, regular, and adequate nighttime residence. It includes shelters, institutions, and places not meant for regular sleeping accommodations. This does not include individuals who may be sleeping on a friend's couch, as we commonly refer to it as a doubled up. Those people are not considered homeless under this definition, so keep that in mind. And the definition of veteran is a person who served in the active military and who was not discharged or released under conditions other than dishonorable. So those are the two requirements. They must be homeless and they must be a veteran in order to be eligible for the program. You can only submit one application per organization, so you can't do multiple, for one for urban and one for non-urban. You can only submit one application. You must include, and it's very important that you talk about the participation and outreach with your DevOps and your Leaver staff. Talk about how you're going to work with organizations that are familiar with the complex needs of homeless veterans. If you don't have experience working with veterans, then you need to partner with an organization who does, and it's important to talk about how and why that they are the best qualified. This is an employment-focused program aimed at getting veterans to maintain and keep meaningful long-term employment. So one thing here is we're not talking about just getting veterans in, giving them minimal training to get the minimum wage jobs. We're talking about really assessing, finding out what their skills are, and finding employment that will be meaningful and something that will allow them to keep up and maintain housing and services if need be for them and their families. This is a highly competitive grant with the very high outcomes, as I mentioned, the 66 and the 65 percentages. And you must know that you're going to have to at least meet those, if not exceed those, in order to be competitive, truly competitive for the process. The minimum score of those totals I gave you before is 70, but the competitive range is usually much higher than that. The national average cost per placement last year was around $2,500. So if your program is well over that, or if for some reason you know that you come in lower or you come in higher, you want to make sure that you explain that within your program design. For instance, you might have to pay for, in a city, you might have to pay more costs for training or different types of services there. In a rural location, you might have to pay more for transportation. So you want to take into consideration and explain if you come in line with that $2,500 figure. The grant will begin July 1st, and you will be expected to begin serving veterans shortly thereafter, if not directly on July 1st. So the program year begins July 1st and will run through June 30th. So you will be held accountable starting July 1st to start getting and entering veterans into employment. As I mentioned, you must attend and budget for the annual conference, which will be done in the D.C. area in the July-August timeframe. Two individuals must attend, and you must have those dollars within your budget in order to use them. I think that is all the information I have at this point, but I would like to go ahead and open it up for questions, and we'll go through as many as we possibly can and kind of take it from there.
All lines are open.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
My question is, she said that you had to be, for 18 months, you have to have had an audit in order to qualify for this grant. And if you are a new organization, but you've had a history with working with veterans, do you still have to, is that a requirement that must be adhered to?
Yes, it is.
It is.
Yes. The only way is if your organization is brand new and you haven't been in existence for 18 months, then
Right. Then
you would have to put in that information shortly thereafter, but that's done on a case-by-case and rarely done.
Okay. So even if you've had the history, I mean, you've been working with veterans for many years, and if you've been doing things out of your pocket, that does not qualify.
That's correct. It goes back to the law defining the actual thing, and if you refer to the SGA, it gives you the specific requirements underneath the cost proposal.
Okay.
Did I get the table in?
Is there another question?
We didn't get
in conjunction with the question that was just asked.
And
that a person that's just starting to come
in,
and we don't have the audit in place. Is that, does that mean we need to just stop trying to pursue this grant?
Or partner with another organization that does have that information.
Okay.
How soon after a person is enrolled in this program that they become housed and are no longer considered homeless, would they still be considered eligible for the program? In other words, if we enroll someone in our program and get them housing the next day?
At the time of enrollment into the HVRP program, they have to be homeless.
At the time of enrollment?
That's the only thing.
So they may enroll, and they may then get housing the day after that, and then the actual training program doesn't begin for a few weeks, but that's all right?
As long as they're enrolled in your program at that point, yes. But at that point, they're enrolled, so they'll start into your numbers and your assessments and those types of things.
When will we be notified that we've been awarded the funding?
Typically, it's early to mid-June.
Do you have a list, or do you know, I don't know all the people that might need a partner, but somebody was saying earlier, that we've been doing things out of our pocket, working with the vet, transporting them to the VAs and all this stuff. I really don't have anybody that I know I can partner with, but do you have a list that might be seeking partners?
You can. There's a number. We do have some listed on our website underneath Homeless Veterans Service Providers. Locate a community-based organization, and you can search by state.
Mm-hmm.
You can also contact your local, one-stop employment agencies and see if they have someone that they've been working with, because
okay.
the DVOPs and the leavers work out of those offices. You could also try your HUD continuum of care process and see if there's individuals within there. But
okay.
those are just a few places that you might look for.
Okay. So VA, if you go to, like, VA, I've been talking with VA, and VA was like, can VA contract you to work for them, like doing the case management, the linkage, and getting them involved in the jobs, getting them out from under the bridges and stuff like that?
Not under this grant, no.
Okay.
They can under different, but not under this grant. That's a different funding source.
Okay.
Can I follow on to that last statement you made?
Yes.
We're currently working with a regional mental health authority, substance authority, Central North Carolina, and we provide 15 beds for men with a history of substance abuse.
I lost the caller there. I didn't hear the end of it.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see if he comes back online.
Okay.
I got blown away there for a second by someone. The question has to do with transmission or transference of the men.
Okay, I think we lost him again. Is there another question?
Yes, I have a question. Kind of adding what he's saying. I don't provide 15 beds, but I have right now 4 apartments, and I'm working on 4 other apartments, so the total of 8 units, and negotiating for another 150 apartments. That, even though I don't have the history, I have been working with veterans, and my son is a disabled veteran. The ones that I've been working with have been in the vet community, and everybody that has worked on my project, the rehab of it, have been veterans, and I feel kind of bad because I don't qualify, even though I'm doing this, and as far as me trying to find someone to partner, a faith-based organization, even though I have the history, it would not qualify with this program, and I'm not a nonprofit. I'm not a nonprofit organization. Like I said, I've been doing this out of my pocket. And how does that? Do you have to? I think you said, and from me reading the RFP, it said that for-profits could also apply for this, as well as nonprofits. But the faith-based organization, would they be the ones that would manage the money?
If they're the organization that is funded, and faith-based usually falls into 501c3 status, so they
yes.
are eligible, they would be the funded organization, yes, and they would be the management of the dollars.
Okay, and do they have to have a history of working with veterans?
No,
because I'm partnering with them,
You could partner with them, and that would be acceptable. Is the
that
operator
is
still on the call?
I'm sorry.
I'm trying to find the operator for
yes,
a minute.
Yes, ma'am.
Can we mute the lines and have individuals opened up as they come through? There's just too much noise to hear what's going on.
Yes, ma'am. One moment.
I'm going to take calls individually. She's going to tell you questions individually, so when she comes back on, she's going to tell you how to ask a question. There's just too much background noise.
If you would like to ask a question, press star 1 on your keypad, please.
Yeah, to answer your question in a little bit more detail, you have to fall into one of those 4 different categories I talked about to be eligible for the program. The organization that would apply for it would be the one that would receive the grant, and they would be the one that would administer the dollars. Now, it doesn't mean that they can't partner with somebody that does have a long history and to do those types of things, But keep in mind that because of the high levels and the high percentages of the HVRP grant, most of the programs that get these HVRP grants have been in existence for some time and do have that relationship within the community. So it's not something that is unheard of that a new organization could get the dollars, but because of the fast turnaround time of when it's awarded and the quick time that you're going to have in order to get these jobs placed, individuals to the training and into place, there's usually a process where well-established organizations score and are more competitive within this program. Okay, other questions?
Yes, we have a question from Kenneth Blackman. Kenneth, your line is open.
Go ahead. Okay, is there another one?
Your next question comes from Judy Last.
I missed where your presentation is, your slide.
On our website, which is www.nchv.org. On the right-hand side, you'll see a graphic that says conference calls.
Mm-hmm.
When you click on that, it's right there on top. It says presentation.
Okay, thanks.
It was also emailed to you as well. It's the same one that was emailed to you.
I think it was emailed to my supervisor, and I didn't get it.
Okay, it's either place.
Okay, thanks.
Your next question comes from Mary Madigan.
Yes, hi. I wanted to speak about a development we have here in Detroit for permanent supported housing for homeless veterans that will open in June, and we're very keen on trying to work the HVRP program into the array of services we're offering these veterans. Our question is about at what point are they no longer considered homeless? We have relationships with temporary shelters and you know, continuum of care providers who are doing various services for homeless veterans. So we're confident that we can be doing outreach and getting people into the program before they get to our building. But it's that enrollment piece. You said earlier that they're homeless at the point of enrollment. Is there a standard enrollment form? How do we document that they were enrolled on a certain day before they became housed?
It would be part of their case management plan, and most organizations have their own case management case assessment forms.
All right.
And just to add on that a little bit more, keep in mind that if you're a program that accepts referrals or that may come from somewhere else, and I know this is going to sound kind of harsh to some of you in the area, but the HVRP program is not for all homeless veterans. And the reason I say that, because it is an employment-specific program, there are going to be individuals in a lot of instances that the ultimate goal or one of the ultimate things that, let's say, they come into your program and you're going to do an immediate assessment on them, you're probably going to determine if employment is, A, appropriate for that individual based on their disability, their mental status, those types of things, and if it makes sense for them to be able to get to that point. So in a lot of instances, veterans will come in, they'll do a basic assessment, determine if it makes sense that, you know, either based on major disabilities or life stages, whatever it may be, employment may be not be the ultimate outcome for that individual.
Right.
That person would not be appropriate for the HVRP program. So they would count towards your assessments, but they would not be considered enrolled in your program.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the reason I say that is because HVRP is employment specific and not everybody is going to go to full-time employment. So when I say employment, when I talk about HVRP, it's full-time employment. It can be self-employment, but it is full-time employment. So if you've got older veterans that may not be able to work full-time or not wanting to work full-time because they have pensions or whatever it may be, HVRP may not be the place for them.
If we have tenants moving into the building who are filling out applications to live in the building, it would be appropriate at that point then for them to fill out paperwork to enroll or to be assessed for enrollment in HVRP?
You would have to assess them for enrollment, yes, at the time that they move in, because they would have to be. The rule is if you can say that when the person is enrolled in the program, they are homeless, then they are eligible.
But at the point they move in, they're no longer homeless.
Correct. So you're going to have to think through that a little bit and go through that. But most of the time, programs, and I don't know that much about yours, so I'm speaking generally here, is that, you know, there's going to be a time when they apply and then a time when they come in to actually move in. During those maybe 2 weeks or a week when they submit their application is when an assessment could be done. At that point, they're still homeless.
Yeah.
And they could even be and they could be enrolled at that point. But as soon as they move into that housing,
I hear
they're considered they're not considered homeless.
Right. Okay, very good. Thank you.
Your next question comes from Linda McFadder.
Hey, can you like partnership with the community college, which is already doing a program for is helping the homeless veterans do job applications and getting them sort of like on the turnaround for getting placed on jobs?
Yes, that would be a training partnership that you would work with them on, yes.
Thank you. Okay.
Your next question comes from Lisa Betchell.
Actually, I'm with Lisa here. Our operation is owned and operated by veterans, and we've been doing it nearly 20 years. How much gravity or weight is given to organizations that are owned and operated by veterans?
It would go into the experience section, and the percentages and the total breakdown of that is listed within the SGA.
Thank you very much.
Your next question comes from Kenneth Blackman.
The last conversation with the lady answered very well our situation. And that is, if I understood what you said, we will assess the applicants, the veterans who are homeless, and determine their eligibility for full-time employment prior to bringing them in and providing them with residence and other supportive care.
That's true. Now, the one thing I did not say is that you are going to have a plan for those individuals that you may, I wouldn't say turn away, but those ones because they will be part of your assessment numbers. So if you determine someone is not appropriate for the HVRP program, you need to be able to say, we're still going to refer them to XYZ. You can't just kind of kick them out. And so they don't want you to, you know, not serve veterans because they're not eligible. They want you to have that resource to be able to refer them somewhere else.
Yes. I mean, every candidate that sends an application here, we are required by the Five County Mental Health Authority to either accept and reasons and plans and have a PCP for them or if they're not appropriate and clearly document the reason why.
Right. So this would just be another piece to that.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Again, to ask a question, please press star 1 at this time. There are no further questions.
Okay. Well, I want to thank everyone for their time. We do, and we will be putting the audio on our website, which is www.nchv.org underneath the conference call section. We will put the audio as well as continue to have the presentations there if you'd like to look at those in the future. As well as if you have additional questions, you can send me an email. Once again, my name is Melanie, and my email address is MLISTON@nchv.org. Once again, that's MLISTON@nchv.org. I would be glad to answer any questions that you may have or anything else that may come up, but I thank everyone for their time and wish you guys all the best of luck.
This concludes today's conference. You may now disconnect.